breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor. The Talk of Connecticut, AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
I love that. I first guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview. You know what it sounds like? Wind.
It does, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. He joins us every other Tuesday, and he's the chairman of the Connecticut Republican Party. He has been since June of 2021. Overwhelmingly elected, by the way. Let's welcome back to the show Chairman Ben Proto. Ben, good morning.
Hey, Gary, how are things this lovely Tuesday, first day of early voting in the great state of Connecticut?
Well, yeah, it's funny that you say that because I wanted to start with that anyways.
Excuse me.
Now, this is for the primary on April 2nd, correct?
Correct. This is for the presidential primary on April 2nd. The primary still has to go forward, and there are, four candidates in an uncommitted line on the ballot. Democrats are, I believe, in a similar situation. I think they have four candidates also, or three candidates and an uncommitted line as well.
Okay. So do we mention who these other candidates are? Because I
believe on our side, as I recall, it was, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Donald Trump, Ryan Brinkley and uncommitted.
Why is Nikki and Ron DeSantis on the ballot when they suspended their campaigns?
Because they never notified the secretary in a timely manner to have their names removed. So the secretary, under our law, the secretary has full discretion as to who is on the ballot, which is very different than in a lot of other states where the parties actually control who's on the ballot. So Secretary Thomas decided who was on the ballot a number of months ago because that's what she has to do pursuant to our statutes. That ballot was set there in alphabetical order. And as both DeSantis and Haley suspended their campaigns, I don't know what Ryan Brinkley is doing. They never notified the secretary that they wanted their name removed from the ballot. The ballot also has to be finalized by state law and then printed by state law by certain dates as well, obviously.
Who in Brinkley is the other candidate? Tell me a little bit about that individual. I'm not sure if
I met him very briefly at an event in New Hampshire earlier this year, a very nice gentleman, but I really could not tell you anything about him. He's not had any contact with us or our office. As I said, I met him in New Hampshire, spoke with him briefly, a very nice gentleman. Okay. I believe a pastor of sorts, but other than that, not really sure.
All right. Now, who's on the Democrat ballot other than Joe Biden?
I'm not sure. The ballots actually can be seen at the Secretary of State's website. The ballots, I believe, are there. And her press release. I think Joe, I'm not sure if Williamson is still on the ballot or not. And there was the congressman who had announced he was running, who was also, I believe, suspended his campaign. And I apologize. And I don't follow the Democrats quite as closely as I follow the Republicans.
Well, I'd hope not. Okay. All right. So let's talk about this early voting. Let's say I wanted to go and vote today. All right. What do I do? Just go to where I would normally go on election day to my local polling station? No. Okay.
Nope. So, there's, I believe pretty much every town has one location. If you want to find your location, again, you can go to the Secretary of State's website, the election page. At the very top of the page is a whole early voting, and there's a link to every town's location. Many are at their city hall or town hall or at their community center or senior center. Polls are open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. They are not open on Friday. It's Good Friday, and obviously not Sunday for Easter Sunday.
And all right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, who foots the bill for this?
The towns.
The towns.
Just like they would for any election. The legislature last year when they approved early voting, as I recall, did approve basically a stipend to each town of $10,500 to conduct their early voting programs, which is not nearly enough to cover the cost of early voting. That's been one of the complaints of the municipal leaders and registrars. Obviously, they have to man these polling locations from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. for these 4 days. In August, if there are any primaries, it will be for 7 days. And for the general election, it will be for 14 days.
Right.
You have to have poll workers. You have to pay those.
Oh, yeah. I know.
You know.
But it's an unfunded mandate from the legislature. They just basically said to every town, which means in many cases, you're probably going to get a raise in your property taxes to offset this cost and several others that
I know the towns are working on their 24-25 fiscal year budgets. So I think in a lot of cases, pretty much all the registrars in the 23-24 budget cycle, they knew this was coming. And so they built into their, or attempted to build in, whether the towns gave it to them or not. Obviously, it's not within their control. Ultimately, it's in the control of the legislative bodies in the town. Registrars' offices in each town have a budget for their year to run all their elections, their primaries in some of these towns. They also have town meetings that the registrars run, things along those lines. So, you know, every town is different in Connecticut as to how they do this, but every town's registrar's office, which is, would have submitted a budget request and a budget would have been approved for that office.
What kind of turnout are we expecting? I mean, look, both parties have a presumptive winner, right? It's Donald Trump and Joe Biden. So I would think many people are just going to say, I don't waste my time.
The presumptive nominees are there. And I think, you know, I will say this, the secretary's office, our office, I know the Connecticut Democrats and the various caucuses and a lot of our town committees, I assume the Democratic town committees as well, have really been pushing out on social media. We've been doing a lot of email to our folks. Hey, if you want to vote, there's early voting. Go try it out. This is a great time to kind of do a dry run on it, see if you like it, don't like it, whatever you want to do with it. Because we, as you say, we have presumptive nominees, and go do it. We're encouraging people to utilize early voting this year. Mm-hmm. We think it's an important aspect for campaigns in Connecticut going forward. It gives us an opportunity to get people in to vote. Once they're obviously in to vote, it provides a cost savings to campaigns, because once you vote, obviously, we don't have to spend more money trying to get you to come vote on election day. You've already done that. And we know from, looking at the data from across the country, that states that have early votings, Republicans tend to do better in early voting than Democrats do, which is somewhat inverse of where we see absentee balloting. And one of the reasons for that is we know that Republicans and Republican-type voters like to go to a polling place
to vote.
As opposed to filling out an application and putting it in the mail. So this is, they view it as going to the polling place to vote, because that's what they're doing.
Wait, online at homecare, #4U.com.
Stay connected through the day. The Talk of Connecticut. Coming up, Mike Gallagher, 10 to noon. Dan Bongino from noon to 3. And Sebastian Gorka on the drive home. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3, Hartford.
All right, 26 minutes after the hour of 7, our guest is the chairman of the Republican Party here in Connecticut, Ben Proto. So, Ben, I know George Logan had a big press conference. Was about a week or so ago, a couple weeks ago, and Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, made an appearance. Was this in Farmington? That's fantastic. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, the Speaker was in, I believe, last Saturday. There was a luncheon with the Speaker in Hartford. that I was at and had an opportunity to talk with Speaker Johnson. Truly just a very unassuming man, just very easy to talk to, very approachable, very committed to the Republican Party, but also very committed to the legislative process and understanding, you know, the art of, to some extent, the art of governing. He and his wife were here. We had a really good lunch. He spent some time talking with everybody, taking pictures, going that. And then we went over to Farmington. We had about 200, 250 people at the Farmington office. The NRCC, the National Republican Congressional Committee, has opened what they call a battle station in Farmington. This is the first battle station that the NRCC has opened in a Democrat target district in the country. Most of the other battle stations that they have opened have been incumbent protection seats. Mm-hmm. This is the first one. So this puts the 5th District very, very high, if not number one, on the Republican NRCC's target list to take back from a Democrat. He again was, just really spent about 10 or so minutes talking to the crowd, really getting them fired up. People from all over Connecticut came to the event, not just from the 5th District, which I think is a great indication.
Do you think we'll get more national money
I missed the beginning.
I'm sorry, because I've only got a minute and a half. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I got two more questions I've got to ask you. Do you think we're going to get national money to help George Logan like we did 2 years ago, and maybe even Mike France? Because I think he's got a winnable seat there in the 2nd District.
So obviously the NRCC is spending money on the office and the programming that will come out of that office, and I think you'll see money being spent there. And we're talking with the NRCC, and I know Mike's folks are talking with the NRCC about the 2nd District and putting money into that race. So yes, I think we're going to see a rather substantial amount of money flowing into CD5 in particular, and hopefully into CD2.
People want to know, and I only have 1 minute, how does the state party help a candidate?
Well, we have the opportunity. We do a lot of different things. So, we will run an early voting program. We will run the absentee program. We will run a GOTV program. And we'll also work with the candidates, and we'll work with various other entities in regards to voter contact, whether it's mail, digital, texting, email, TV, whatever it might be. So we can spend money, and we can run coordinated campaign operations or coordinated campaign expenses where we help them. So monies that flow into our federal account, I can only use my federal, I have two accounts, federal account, state account. I can only use federal dollars to support George and Mike and the federal races, and I can only use state dollars to support our House and Senate.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair enough.
I got one other thing for you. I know you got really quick, but I understand today is a special day for you. Is that true?
I get to talk to you, Ben. Are you kidding me? Anytime is a special day when I get to talk to Ben Proto.
So should I wish you something today?
Oh, thank you very much.
Happy birthday.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Talk to you in 2 weeks, bud.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster.
FM 103.3 Hartford and 105 Litchfield.
Now, originally, our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair would be in studio live with us. In fact, originally, that's how it was scheduled. That's how it was going to go down. Because he is. Every month he's with us. And he even takes your phone calls at the bottom half of the hour. But I got a phone call this morning. I don't know. It was 20 after 5, somewhere around that. All I know is I was on 91. It's pretty close to the station here.
Nice that he didn't just send an email overnight.
Right. Or not bother to call us or contact us at all.
Yeah.
And he sounded horrible, by the way, to the point where I'm like, oh, I already know this guy's canceling because I can just tell, hello, Gary. And I'm like, Tom, don't worry about it. I said, I'll help me try to get somebody else. I know it's harder at this hour. But he goes, no, I can tell, I can still do the segment. I just can't come in. So I said, well, don't worry about the call-in. Let's just do the interview. So this guy is the epitome of a trooper. Folks, he is, let's welcome back to the show, State Representative Tom Delnicki. Representative, how are you feeling thus far?
Well, I feel a heck of a lot better than I did at 5 this morning.
You sound actually a little better.
And the last thing I wanted to do was come in, get into studio, and sneeze and cough and basically give you whatever I might have. I like to give Christmas presents. I like to give birthday presents. I don't want to give a cold.
I'll take a rain check on that. Geez, that's really thoughtful of you. I'm going to take a pass on the gift this morning. But listen, I'm just glad that you're still with us. And you sound a lot better than how you were sounding at 20 after 5 this morning.
When I woke up this morning, I felt awful. You know, and the first thing I'm thinking is, I'm supposed to be in Gary's show. I promise. I've got to go. I've got to do something.
No. We don't want you in here, by the way. No, nothing personal. But, no, we're glad that you're doing this via phone. So we'll be easy on you this morning. We'll talk about – how about, like, these first-time home buyers?
You know, that has been a bill that I've been working on now for 4 years. And we've got CBIA behind us this year. It is a great bill. It's a chance to actually keep people in Connecticut, have them plant their roots, and as a recruitment tool, CBIA gave a great addition to it, the concept of a chance to apply $5,000 to the first-time home buyer. Mm-hmm. As a recruitment tool by an employer, and of course that would be voluntary.
Well, how do you qualify for that, other than being a first-time home buyer? I mean, do you have to have a certain income level? Is it, what if you were gifted the home or quit-claimed the home?
Well, that would be a different, totally different situation there, because if somebody quit-claims you a home, you know that you're not buying it per se. You know, this is a situation where you've got new people. They have an opportunity to buy a home and set their roots here in the state of Connecticut. Because think about it. If you can recruit a good employee and that person decides to buy a home and they work with, you know, the business there and get that tax deduction for the business to have them voluntarily put money in the bank there for them so they can buy a home, and likewise, if they can save the money also and not have the money taxed by the state of Connecticut. If you have a situation like that, a person sets their roots in Connecticut and they set their roots in a company, mm-hmm. and you have a stable workforce, I mean, that's a home run. Because if you buy a home in Connecticut, odds are you're going to stay in Connecticut. And we want to keep people, especially young people, here in the state of Connecticut.
Tom, is there anybody buying a home right now in Connecticut?
There are. I mean, I'll be perfectly blunt with you. The home stock is kind of low right now. But it's still a good program. It's still a program that can help people. It's still a program that will actually help the real estate market too.
Well, right now homes are overpriced, right? It's a seller's market.
Yeah, well, you know, we had the Bidenomics inflation that hit everybody, and things, well, they haven't really stabilized yet. You know, the interest rates are still high, but again, this is a great opportunity, something we can get done, something that will be there. It's not going to disappear. And once, you know, a year or two, we get the interest rates down, then obviously it's there, and it's there to help people.
Okay.
And to keep them here in Connecticut.
But that's controlled by the Fed. The Fed is not, believe it or not, right. I mean, a lot of people know this, but not everybody. The Fed is not controlled by the federal government.
No,
it's a separate entity that works independent. From the federal government.
That's one of those inside baseball deals that people don't realize, that the Fed is not a U.S. Government operation.
No.
And when you think about it, you got to ask yourself a real serious question. Why do we have the Fed? what's their real purpose? And I haven't gotten a lot of good answers on it, other than the fact that they regulate the monetary stream, and they basically regulate what the insurance, what the interest rates are going to be.
Are you hearing that they're going to lower it? I heard June, you could expect anywhere from a quarter to a half of percentage. And then again, maybe at the end of the summer as well.
I'm hearing more and more that it's going to occur before the election. The Fed, well, let's face it, it is a political animal when you think about it. Typically, it goes with whoever's in charge. And you've probably seen that, Gary, where the Fed reacts to the folks that are in charge at that point in time.
Always.
And literally.
With any issue.
Well, exactly. So you've got to expect the Fed to do something before November because, you know, inflation is still a problem. There's no two ways about that. Interest rates are still a huge problem. There's no two ways about that. The cost of everything is higher than it was, you know, 4 years ago. So when you think about that, so you've got to expect some movement, and I would be surprised if there isn't some kind of movement with the Fed right before the election.
Yeah, well, that, I'm hearing June, and I'm also hearing more towards the end of summer, beginning of fall, so we could be right. What about this earned wage access?
Yeah, that's an interesting deal. Earned wage access, say you... I don't know when you get your paycheck, but it's probably every 2 weeks?
No, every week.
Okay, well, you're lucky. Most people, it's every 2 weeks or so. So you run into a problem. You have a flat tire. You got to buy a new tire, something of that nature. And you don't want to put it on a charge card. I mean, it's like 29% interest on a charge card. You know, I mean, think about it. You would have an opportunity to get a wage advance. Now, this is not a payday loan. This is not a payday loan. This is an advance on money that you have coming to you based on your employment. So there's a number, there's like three different models of it. The one that I really like is the employer-sponsored. In other words, like Walmart and Target, they offer it as an incentive to get people and to hire them. And what they do is, with the employer model, you would get an advance. You would have the advance. You'd get it like within 24 hours. It would be put into your bank account or into a debit card. And you'd be able to, you know, meet that need. And that would be deducted from what you would receive in your next paycheck. There would be no service charge. There would be no interest, etc. Then you've got a couple of different models that are not employer-driven. They are actually offered. And, you know, it's interesting. I had never really heard of earned wage access and advances before it came to the banking committee. Hmm. And now I'm seeing more and more ads on TV about getting advances on your pay. And it's like a situation where if it was not the employer-sponsored model, which basically has no surcharge, you would have like a one-time fee. You know, if I needed, say, $100 to get a tire, well, not a tire, is probably $200. If I needed $200 to get a tire with inflation, and I used one of the non-employers.
So you're borrowing against yourself.
You're borrowing it against your pay.
Your paycheck.
That you're due.
Are you charging yourself interest?
No, but you would have, like, with an ATM fee. You ever use an ATM out of market? You know, like, I've got...
I use a Webster
ATM, I'd end up paying, like, I think it's $5 or something if I wanted
to. That's why I don't use ATM cards.
That's why I don't use them either. But it would be kind of like that, where there would be, like, a $3.50 charge, I think $5 charge, somewhere in that range. And, you know, we heard testimony on it from people that you needed it, and people that use it, about how it helped them bridge a gap as opposed to, you know, going and getting an advance on a credit card, because the credit cards, I mean, that's just plain crazy what they're charging right now. The 29% interest they're charging.
Right, right, 25%
5% interest. It's crazy.
So your employer, they have to provide this?
No, it would be voluntary for the employer.
Okay. Do you know many employers that can't wait to do this?
Well, I could think of two right off the bat, and I think I mentioned them. Walmart does it.
I mean, but these are major corporations. I mean, I'm talking about like a mom and pop sole proprietor.
They would be able to do that. They would be able to do it. Most people don't know about it. That's the point. You know, like my local hardware store wouldn't necessarily know about it. The Helmar at the Mill on the River and Market Grill, they wouldn't necessarily know about it. So it's becoming more and more publicized and offered to people. And again, if it's the employer model, that's probably the best one. And it's also an opportunity to, you know, encourage people to come to work for you and to encourage people to stay with you, because you're offering that as a benefit to your employee. You know, one of those voluntary deals. And nobody makes anyone do it.
I get it. All right. Stay right there. Got to take a short break. More with State Representative Tom Delnicki right after this.
When shopping for appliances, where do you stop first? A big box store? They might be your first stop, but Ferrari's Appliance will be your last. From laundry to dishwashers, stoves to refrigerators, Ferrari's Appliance has all the name brands at the price you can afford. And they install and service everything they sell. Enough with the pushy salespeople and impersonal customer service. Head to Ferrari's Appliance in Newington or Naugatuck and discover why people from all over choose them over everyone else. Online at Ferrari'sAppliance.com.
Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Hey guys, did you know there's a generic form of Viagra that works just the same but is 95% cheaper? And you can get it online at hims.com/joy. Through Hims, you'll get a free medical consultation to determine the ED medication that's best for you. Discreet shipping if prescribed, a 100% online process, and a range of treatment options, including trusted generic alternatives to the name brands, at up to 95% off. ED is personal, and at Hims, so is treating it. Just go to hims.com/joy and get connected to a licensed medical provider online for free. With zero copay, no expensive appointments, and no awkward face-to-face conversations. To start your free online visit, you need to go to this exclusive address, hims.com/joy. That's hims.com/joy for your free online visit, hims.com/joy.
Hi, this is Scott Trout of Cordell & Cordell. There are a lot of great dads out there. Sometimes those dads get divorced. For more than 30 years, we have represented men in divorce, confronting the pitfalls that could devastate your finances or harm your family relationships. While every situation is different, our goal is to get the best outcome for you and your kids. Visit CordellCordell.com to take the first step.
Schedule an appointment with one of Cordell & Cordell's Hartford area attorneys, Phyllis McCutcheon, licensed in Connecticut, online at CordellCordell.com.
The voice of reason, Gary Byron and Joe the producer, on the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM 1360 and 103.3 FM.
24 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock here on this Tuesday morning, our guest, State Representative Tom Delnicki, a little under the weather this morning, decided to call in from home rather than come in. But we'll have him back in answering questions at the bottom half, and we'll get to Grace's presence here next month. Go ahead.
And you know, Gary, I enjoy taking the questions on the phone.
Well, you've got a fan club. I mean, they look forward to when the time that you come into the studio live and take the questions. But we'll take this month off from you, and you convalesce, get better, and hopefully you'll be feeling better in no time.
We're bound to have a lot more to talk about when we get closer to the end goal.
Well, that's true. And the end of April, certainly you'll be able to see the checkered flag waving for the final day of the session I wanted to ask you about these temporary shelters in these churches. I know you know a little bit about this.
Yeah, that's... I don't know if you're familiar with the bill, but it came out of planning and development. And it's a as of right on property owned by religious organizations. It allows 8 temporary shelters on any single lot of about 400 square feet per shelter. Now, think about it. That's 20 feet by 20 feet. And each one of these shelters could have a family in it or two non-family members in it.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to have heating and cooling. It would have to have structural integrity so that if you had bad weather, it wouldn't get blown away. It would require toilets and water hookups and sewer and things of that nature. But think about it. It's an as-of-right. It can't be within 1,000 feet of a cemetery.
Why is that?
Well, that's in the bill. And quite frankly, I'm glad that's in the bill because, you know, you've got a lot of religious organizations that own cemeteries, and conceivably you could have these things spring up next to them. It's interesting because any town with a population above 25,000, this would be an as-of-right. So, you know, right off the bat, Newington's, what, 30,000? So your town would have that as-of-right.
Mm-hmm.
South Windsor's 26,000, and it would have it as of right. Manchester, Enfield, Glastonbury, Vernon, Wethersfield, just, you know, in this area.
Yeah.
Would have it as of right. There's about 50.
What purpose do they serve, Tom?
It's supposed to be a temporary shelter for homeless people and for
refugees.
Refugees also.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I kind of thought that was the impetus of this.
Yeah, because that's in the bill. It's homeless and refugees.
Uh-huh.
So it then gets into what is a refugee, and I'm sure that a number of folks are going to be concerned over that. They need to keep an eye on the bill to see where it goes. You know as well as I do, many a time there's going to be amendments and a bill gets amended because initially, when this was brought up, it was 15,000 as opposed to 25,000.
Where are they going?
Well, take a church in your town. They own property.
Where are they going now, though?
Well, right now?
Yeah.
They would probably be going, you know, folks that need a homeless, that are homeless, would probably go to a homeless shelter, say, in Hartford, in Waterbury, in New Haven, Bridgeport, your larger municipalities that basically have the services there.
Do we have more homeless right now than any time in, let's say, recent history, maybe the last 20 years?
Right now, if you include, quote, refugees along with homeless, we probably do.
But they're illegal aliens.
Well, there you go. Okay. It's a situation that, you know how we talk about a slippery slope? Well, right now it's at 25,000. It could go lower in population. It could actually, because initially they were talking about 15,000, and it got amended up to 25. You know, when we were JFing the bill out of committee.
But what I'm saying is that these refugees that are coming in from the border and they're coming into Connecticut, where do you know where they're going?
That's a good question. There was a. You've got a document that you were talking about that talked about coming refugees.
And, I got that about a month or so ago. I only got about 15 seconds.
Bottom line is, they're probably located in a number of, say, charities that are bringing them in. They could very well be in some hotels and motels. I don't know about that for sure.
Okay.
So we need to do a little investigating.
I would say so. All right, listen, my friend. Thanks for being a trooper and still making an appearance despite being sick. Open phones are next.
I'm Chris Foster. Rescue crews are searching a river in Baltimore where a container ship crashed.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
Oh,
man, I love it. I love when this next guest is on. He's with us towards the end of every month. He is the pastor emeritus over at Lifeway Church on the Berlin Turnpike in Newington. He's got a brand new book. In fact, I remember he was teasing us about it last month. I want to find out more about it. Let's welcome back to the show Pastor Joel Ritzinger. Pastor, good morning.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Gary.
Happy birthday to you.
Ah, shucks, man. It's very nice of you. Of course, you know, now my ears will never hear the same again after the both of you. But
hey, we practice. We're going on the road together soon. It's just, you know, it's coming.
Yeah, let me know how that goes, by the way. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. On the road like roadkill, maybe. But yeah,
yeah. Like, you guys are heading on the road like a couple of possums. So, are you in sunny Florida?
I am not. I am in beautiful, semi-cloudy Connecticut. Right now we are helping a church up in Danielson, Killingly area.
Okay.
And we'll be here, I think, for several months probably. Their pastor left somewhat suddenly, so we're filling the gap and doing some work with them. And we expect to be in Connecticut for most of this year, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, we've only begun the year. We're only almost 4 months into the year. You're going to be with us for the remainder of it. Wow, that's great.
So.
Well, yeah. I guess I get it. We get to have lunch or dinner or coffee or all of the above?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That I look forward to that because we're only an hour away, really, from Newington area and Hartford. So, yeah.
Very well. So last time you were with us, you were maybe the final stages of getting your new book published.
Yes.
And tell us what its title is, tell us what it's about, and what inspired you to take pen to paper again.
Well, the book is called The Death and Rebirth of Discipleship and talks about how God is, I think, renewing what is somewhat of a lost art, I think, in the last 50 years or so. And by that I mean, obviously, not every church, not every situation, but as I travel and we do work in Canada and the East Coast, Eastern U.S., and even overseas in parts of Africa, we see that there's been a huge emphasis on getting people to attend church, to become Christians, a lot of new believers that have been brought into the body of Christ over the last few decades. But... Well, Jesus used the analogy, so I will too. He said, I'm going to make you fishers of men. And I think we've gotten really good at catching fish, but not so much at cleaning them. meaning that there have been a lot of people who've not grown as I think God would want, that mm-hmm. discipling people, building them up in maturity spiritually has kind of fallen by the wayside. Sometimes we assume that a program or some kind of system would almost make it happen automatically. But, you know, there are a lot of people who go to church Sunday, they hear a message. That's probably the last time they're really thinking about God or doing much about their spiritual growth until the next Sunday. So the book is designed to...
Yeah, but at least they're going every Sunday. There's so many people that just stopped going to church years ago. And,
right. That's
you know, true. So, you know, if you're going every Sunday, I mean... Isn't that a good thing? Wouldn't you like to get people to go to church every Sunday?
Oh, absolutely. But if that's all we do, you know, I think our Jesus was with his disciples 24/7, you know, and I think he wants to be with his disciples today 24/7. And so there needs to be some intentional plan and
a relationship, maybe a relationship,
to build that relationship. Yeah. To spend time with him every day. And churches, I think, should do what they can to help mentor and coach people along those lines. And so the book gives some ideas about that. Some, I guess, big picture thoughts and paradigm issues about that. And really just is encouraging leaders to take a second look and say, hey, how can we do a better job of helping people grow to be more like Jesus every day?
Is part of the problem that so many individuals are wrapped up in their own life, with work, maybe working two jobs, involved in their kids and their extracurricular or sport activities after school, or they're too deep into themselves, maybe on their phone, that they neglect to have a relationship with Christ.
Well, yeah, I think you're right, Gary. And I think part of it, too, is that we compartmentalize our lives, right? Mm-hmm. We sort of have our spiritual life in a little box over here. And then on the other side of the table is our work life, and then our sex life, and then our family life, and then our this and our sports life. And they're all separate. And, you know, near you and I have talked about this with regard to politics. I mean, people, they have their political views in a separate box. And I think God intends for us to have it all integrated, that our faith is the basis for everything we think, say, and do. So even when we're busy, and you're right, I mean, there's a lot of good busyness and there's narcissism to deal with, right? I mean, you're absolutely right about that. But even when we're just busy because we have no choice, you know, we've got to pay the bills, got to take care of the family, I think God would love to be part of all of that, you know, and have us be very keenly aware of his presence and all of that.
Well, all right, so we've got Good Friday coming up, and we've got Easter Sunday. Now, yeah. Even people who don't, regularly attend church service, they at least go on 2 days a year, right? Christmas and Easter. What can be said? What message can be conveyed to those who will be attending Easter Mass and they haven't attended since Christmas? What can you convey to them that might just tempt them to, I don't know, be a member and attend weekly?
Right. Well, I think one of the things is that, you know, Jesus rose from the dead. That's what we celebrate on Easter, for example, right? Mm-hmm. That means he's alive, and he wants a relationship. And all of us know that if we want to maintain a relationship with someone, we have to talk to them, we got to listen to them, we have to spend time, right? I mean, relationships take time. And so maybe one of the things we convey is that he's inviting you into that kind of ongoing, you know, relationship where there's instant communication, where there's that constant sense of presence, where there's blessing that comes with that, and really encourage people to take advantage of that. Now, I know there will be many who would say, well, you don't have to go to church to be a Christian, or going to church doesn't make you a Christian any more than going to a bakery makes you a loaf of bread, and, you know, these kind of sayings on social media. And that's true. However, Jesus wanted, he said, I'm going to build my church. He talked about her a lot. In fact, the New Testament scripture is clear that he sees her as his bride, that he loves her, and tells us not to forsake assembling together like some do, because he wants us together as a body for our sake and to connect with him. And so there's a deeper sense of his presence when we're all together than when we're just doing the solo act. But I encourage the solo act. I encourage one-on-one connection and mentoring. I encourage groups and obviously Sunday morning services. And we think people, as they do those things, they become enriched spiritually, emotionally, really in every way.
You know that, and I there's a lot of truth in what you just said, and to the point I was trying to make, where people are just seem so preoccupied with their life or their work or their children that they don't make the time to attend service. We got to look at it from another perspective, though. Are people themselves the believer that they were earlier in their life, or? Do we have as many believers anymore? Here we are trying to, you know, get those who do believe to attend service. But what can we do? Or is there anything to be done for those who just have lost their faith completely and say, I throw my hands up in the air, there can't be a God? What do you say to, you know, so therefore, why waste my time? Yeah, no, I've got the time to go. I'm just not going to go because I don't believe. What do you say to them?
Well, you know, it's a strategy, I think, of the enemy, Satan, the devil, to try to convince us that we're better off by ourselves or better off away from God. You know, he's the one who paints the picture of God's mean, God's unfair, God isn't. He doesn't care. God isn't, maybe he isn't even real. And of course, that's all part of the shtick for him, right? So
sometimes we have to stand our ground against that and say, wait a minute, you know, Lord, show me that you're still with me. Lord, you know, work with me, help me to see you as you are and to start fresh, you know, hit the restart button. When I was a kid, I hated church. I thought Christians were idiots. I was a troublemaker.
I know you were.
And yeah. I remember a bunch of people loving me, being just really kind to me that shouldn't have been, you know, and it messed with my head. I actually thought, man, these people, what is that? What's up with them? There's something wrong with them. And it brought me to my knees, ultimately saying, okay, God, if you're there, show me. And the rest is history. I mean, my life radically changed from that. So I think when we do take it to him and tell him how you feel, tell him that you're mad at him or you don't understand what's going on or whatever, and ask him to show you, to walk with you, I think God honors those prayers. And so that might be the best starting point for someone in that boat.
Okay, got to take a break here. When we come back, you know, we hear about the separation of church and state, but are they really so separate right now? More with Pastor Joel Risinger right after this.
Elevate your legacy with Daley Connerton Memorial Company. Introducing Daley Connerton Monuments, where dreams take shape in stone. Immerse in custom craftsmanship, where every chisel stroke narrates a tale. Transform memories into magnificent monuments while you cherish the past, celebrate the present, and immortalize your story in granite and marble. Let Daley Connerton carve your vision into reality, creating iconic monuments that stand as a testament to your legacy. Call Daley Connerton. 860-242-4133. Daley Connerton, where memories live forever.
No one ever likes calling their insurance company. It usually means there's a problem. And when there's a problem, you don't want to talk to a stranger. You want your agent, the agent who knows you. That's Michael Van Otterkirk and his staff at State Farm of Newington. State Farm has been the number one auto insurer in the U.S. every year since 1946. So when a problem arises, you'll be relieved to call State Farm of Newington, 860-666-1037. Because like a good neighbor, State Farm of Newington is there.
The voice of reason, Gary Byron and Joe the producer on the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM 1360 and 103.3 FM.
It is 23 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, as we always do towards the end of every month. We talk to Pastor Emeritus over at Lifeway Church on the Berlin Turnpike in Newington, Pastor Joel Risinger. You know, they always say the two conversations never to have with anybody at the dinner table, like, you know, particularly when you have company over, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas Eve, Christmas dinner. We got Easter, you know, like I said, this weekend. You don't want to talk about both religion and politics are the taboo topics. Are they somehow nowadays, though, kind of intertwined or...
Yeah.
What do you think on that?
Well, you know, I'm a guy who thinks that all these things should be interconnected in the sense that we our faith is the basis for everything. One of the biggest problems we have in our government right now is that we have people claiming to be people of faith who, you know, make decisions and policies that are in the face of God, in the face of everything that Scripture teaches and that Jesus stood for. And so I think we ought to let our faith be lived out in every respect, including how we govern, how we lead. But putting that aside, as far as the average Joe like you and me, I mean, I don't think that politics and religion are fully intertwined. I think that we do have still a lot of people afraid to talk about either one. It's ironic that we wouldn't be able to talk about at least religion on Easter, but you're right, around the dinner table, sometimes people are afraid. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're intertwined in the sense that, as I mentioned, a lot of people don't make political decisions or vote according to their faith, ergo we're in the mess we're in, right? And as a pastor in New England for the last 30-plus years, I've never felt that church and state were united in any way, shape, or form. Au contraire, mon ami, you know, many times. So yeah, I guess it depends on the person. Mm-hmm. It also depends on the faith, Gary, because if your faith is humanism, if your faith is in, you know, sort of a new age sort of spirituality, well, then, yeah, you might be accepted and you might be able to talk about it in religious, not only religious terms, but when you discuss politics, the universe can guide you. But if you mention God or Christ, you find out real quickly that that's not embraced and that they aren't intertwined. And people feel they shouldn't be in any way performed.
You think maybe they're not being introduced to, I'm talking about, let's say, this newer generation, the millennials. And are they just not being introduced to God by their parents? That's how it came to me, you know, with catechism and going to church forcibly, of course, when you're, you know, 10 years old and you just got taken away from the ball game and you were on a roll. I was hitting homers and then got to go to church. 5 o'clock mass came around, and then when you become an adult, you're on your own. You can decide for yourself. But if you never were exposed to it to begin with, is it not much more difficult then to get into the routine of attending, you know, service every Sunday?
Well, I think that's true, Gary. But I think even a bigger culprit. I talk to parents all the time, Christian parents, almost every day it seems, who are grieving the fact that their children have walked away from the faith or rejected the faith, and yet they did all the stuff that you mentioned and more. You know, they took them to Sunday school, they taught them at home, they did this and they prayed around the table and all that stuff. But our education system is absolutely atheistic, communistic now in its foundation, and of course the root of communism is atheism, and it's very anti-God. So kids who go through the system and then go to college are often pushed away from anything of faith, anything religious, and made to feel that it's stupid or, you know, some sign of almost mental health problems to think that there's a God or that you should somehow practice worship in any way, shape, or form. I know many kids who, you know, went into college feeling, you know, fairly confident in their faith and then left with an absolute rejection of faith because professors have tried to convince them, or I guess have in many cases convinced them, that this whole thing is, well, as Marx put it, right, it's the opiate of the masses. It's just silly, it's a myth, it's a drug, but it's not something you should put your trust in.
So there's a connection between there's a connection between atheism and communism then.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you don't have to read much of what any socialist write or what communist Marx himself wrote to see that there's an absolute rejection of this concept of God and Christianity and church. Hitler played along with it during his regime, during his reign. I'm actually working through Bonhoeffer, the biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Yep.
Great pastor who fought against Hitler in Germany. Hitler played along at first like he was, you know, pro-Christian or pro-church, but he was trying to make the church into his own image. And when that failed, then, of course, it came out that he's rejecting it and that Christians were a problem, et cetera, along with the Jews. So I think it's historically pretty consistent that communism, socialism is directly opposed to Christianity in particular and other faiths as well.
The name of the book is The Death and Rebirth of Discipleship. Discipleship. Yep. I like that word. I can't wait to read it. I think you sent it to me in PDF format.
Yes.
And I appreciate that. I also appreciate your time with us this morning. Check out the book wherever books are sold, wherever you typically buy your books. Perhaps check out Amazon. And Lifeway Church will have an Easter service this Sunday, right? Two of them.
Yep, two services, 9:30, 11:15. I will not be there because I'm going to
be... That's right, you're helping the church.
All
right, thanks.
I'm Chris Foster. It's been more than 8 hours now since vehicles and workers are believed to have fallen.